So let's, you know, start our discussion about developing metrics. So how to get the best return on investment, commonly known as ROI, for our recruitment related activities. I'm sure people who intend to become recruitment professionals, who are already tenured professionals, would both try to know. There's a certain sense of curiosity which might have developed as I was speaking. So let me take you through these aspects. So to measure the return, start monitoring a couple of different activities and costs. So some of you might also have a project management background where you might have known the opportunity cost, the value mechanisms. So here we come across certain costs or parameters specific to the hiring process towards the recruitment related processes. So the first key metric or parameter is called as the cost per hire. Now, of course, as the name goes, this is a very self-explanatory type of metric, and it's a number. Okay, so it's a number. Now, this particular number tells us how much is being spent, what is the amount that is being spent to bring a new employee on board. Now, by this time, we are now in the third, in the third chapter, you might have realized, okay, you might have also made a quick calculation of the, the key factors. Like, let's say, what is the position? What is the time that is being spent? What is the money that will be offered? If it's an external recruitment, what amount would you be spending? So this, all these constituents, they add up to the CPH. The second key metric is the time to fill. Okay. Now, this is a metric in terms of the duration, in terms of the days, probably. Okay. The days that are taken, or the man hours or the man days that are taken to fill a certain void or a vacancy. So this tells how long it is taking to fill open positions. Now, there are many people who base this statistic and they create certain important trends which can be useful in determining the future time or speculations done. So cost per hire tells how much is being spent. We've already covered this, just a few more points of explanation. Okay, this metric is critical for both planning and tracking purposes. Planning meaning you can articulate or develop a plan for a future ramp up. Okay, and of course you can track the expenses as well. Once this cost is known, you can plan budgets for future, as I was saying, by tracking actual numbers for each hire. You can measure how effective each of your employee recruitment efforts have been, and these are the specific headers which contribute to a CPH. It can be in the form of promotional fees or advertising fees. So you create an advertisement on a newspaper, you pay them, correct? If you are creating a specific advertisement on Google, if it's a very niche position, and if people will watch that, they will do a Google search or a LinkedIn search, then you have to pay job posting fees on the job boards. Recruitment agencies for retained searches, executive searches, exclusive searches, employee referral fees. So each organization has a set budget for referrals. Like for a specific cadre of management, you get a specific amount. If the level increases, the referral amount increases as well. Travel expenses. So if you have to travel, for example, when I was in a past organization, I used to travel extensively to Hyderabad, Bangalore, Delhi and Noida and other places for drives. Relocation fees. So if you have inducted a person on board, if you've recruited, do they have a relocation? Okay, charges. So do you need to give them some fees for them to set up their home at a different location? Internal recruiter costs. So if you have more people joining, do you pay them, are they on the rolls or are they on the rolls of the consultant? And of course, administrative charges and costs. So these fall under the heading of cost per hire. So the next metric that we are going to discuss, we had done a brief description earlier, is the time to fill. And as discussed earlier, it is determined by tracking the duration that each job takes to fill. For example, let's say a job of maybe a production manager. Okay, so the requirement has come up like let's say 10 days ago, and today it will be filled. So that particular duration will be recorded. So here record the date the position comes open. For example, the position has come open on the 25th of November 2022. Next, record the date the position is filled. So that will be the 6th of December 2022, which is the current date. The difference is the time to fill. Okay, so the difference between the 25th and the 6th, those 8 days or 9 working days will be the difference in the time to fill. Now, how is this information important, or how is this critical? So this information is critical in measuring the productivity of the recruiting staff and which employee recruiting sources are working best. For example, if there were not just one position but three positions, so three product managers required or three supervisors required, now which source gave you the fastest time to fill can be determined here. The next is the vacancy rates metric. So conducting an examination of the overall vacancy rates as compared to the full staff may provide recruiters with some valuable information. In this case, an examination of vacancy rates helps to identify which departments are experiencing the most difficulty and can assist you to adjust your strategies. So if there is a high rate of vacancy, you might want to introspect the reasons. You might also want to focus in that particular aspect. The next is the turnover rate. Now, what is turnover? We've already discussed. Turnover is nothing but the attrition that happens, the people that leave. So this metric is helpful in understanding the rate at which the attrition occurs. So higher turnover rates in any job category suggest a number of difficulties, hindrances, or obstacles that are faced by people working there. Therefore, they would love to leave for better prospects or an easier life. So the job tasks may not be well defined, resulting in the wrong type of skill being recruited. So if you do some background research, some analysis, you might find amongst the many factors which add to this turnover, one which is a wrong recruitment that has been done in the past. The candidate assessment tools may also need revision. It is also wise to assess the cost of turnover. So turnover is not a pleasant event. I'm sure everybody agrees. And if recruitment professionals find few aspects as to why turnover is happening on a frequent note, they can help in reducing the turnover along with the other HR endeavors. The next is the selection ratios. So it's a ratio, it's a comparison. So a selection ratio is simply the number of people hired divided by the number of applicants, correct? So after the filters have been set, a specific X number of people will be hired against a very broad pool Y, let's say. So this is the ratio of people who were in the initial pool vis-a-vis the people who've been hired. So a very small number may mean that you did not attract the right applicant. So there are several interpretation aspects which can be seen here. So very small number means what? The selection or the filtering was huge, correct? So very small, a fractional number from the large pool indicates you are not able to advertise the job well, you are not able to set the JD properly, you are not able to match the job description, the personality description with the qualities. Now this is a wastage of time, it's a waste, it's an unproductive hiring process. On the other hand, a large number, of course this is pretty theoretical, subject to speculation, but number close to one may show that you did not attract enough applicants to effectively hire the right people, correct? So that means there was a smaller pool and the selection happened from that pool, and you had to inadvertently, you had to hire those people. So both these selection ratios show a deficiency in the hiring or the recruitment system. The next is the quality of the hire. So this metric allows for assessment of the quality of the candidate. Is the successful candidate fully qualified, and or will the organization be required to invest immediately in order to increase their skills? For example, if you are hiring semi-skilled workers with a presumption or a default that post their hiring they will be undergoing a strenuous, a rigorous certification of their skills, an upgradation of their skills, then the quality of hire is seemingly average or poor. If you are inducting into the system, hiring into the system people with low needs of training, then the quality of hire is higher than usual. So this also is a factor which will, you know, change the cost per hire, which is one of the factors which we had seen earlier, in fact the first one. The next is the retention rates. So what is retention? Retention means the longer the person stays in the organization, correct? There is no attrition that is observed. So this metric is used to assess this particular factor, correct? How long does a candidate stay in the position? What happens to them? What sort of progression do they experience? So are they promoted or do they leave much earlier than you had calculated? If they leave the role in the organization, then it is time to do some rework. It is time to sit back in the planning table, at the planning table, and analyze the job to ensure the required skills. So is the JD properly articulated? Are the job requirements properly articulated and cited or not? So now we move to the last part probably of this chapter, which is the recruitment strategies to create a diverse workforce. So as we understand, we have just, you know, we're still in a pandemic which has now subsided majorly. So every HR professional in the current conditions should be aware of issues surrounding diversity. We've had a very basic level discussion in the first chapter related to diversity. It's a major topic of conversation in the industry right now, and for a good reason. Unfortunately, not many organizations go far enough when it comes to recruiting and retaining a diverse workforce. Now, I had explained prior, you might want to refer to that discussion as to what is a diverse workforce, right? Many people, even HR professionals, assume that a lack of overt discrimination is all that is needed for diversity to thrive. Let me simplify this statement with the help of an example. So, in a previous organization, there was a human resources professional, a senior professional, who was pretty happy because they had people from a similar area, but there was not much of discrimination or a bias. And there was nothing which came up to the surface, even though there were people who were later recruited from states like Orissa, states like Assam, states like Punjab, but there was no discrimination. But is this all? No. So they also had to be gender-based diversity. They also had to be diversity based on, do you have some people with a lot of other skills? So those were not present, and it led to a boring environment where decision making was slow. So you need to also have people from different regions, different ages, different qualifications. You need fresh graduates. You need gender diversity for better decision making, better problem solving, better people management, and of course, better productivity. So let's quickly again revisit this concept since it's so important. Okay, so what is diversity? And why does it matter? Well, diversity refers to a variety of different characteristics in a group of people. So when we consider the land of India, what do we see as diversity? You might want to pause this video for some time and just visualize with your eyes closed about diversity. Correct? So diversity, in fact, as stated here, represents a difference, okay? Or it represents people coming from different streams or walks of life. Like of course, a male and female diversity, the basis is gender. Races, so races represent different demographic sections of people. So if you were to go to the United States or Europe, you would see that there is a race-based diversity as well. People coming from the Caucasian race, people coming from the African race, people coming from the Asian race, people coming from the ethnic Australian race, and so on. People coming from the Oriental race or the Mongoloid race. And all of them come together and they are a part. Like the Silicon Valley example is a classic example of race-based diversity, where organizations like Google have people from India, they have people from China and Japan, Korea, they've got people from Europe, they've got people from South America, and so on. Of course, sexual orientation, so people who have preference towards same-sex, people who have preference towards heterosexual, and so on. Disability, so there are people with disabilities who also need employment. There are people who walk on crutches, there are people who have eye impairments, there are people who have listening disabilities, and of course, age. Age relates to elderly people, age relates to middle-aged people, age relates to the youngsters who graduate from the colleges. It can also refer to things like skills. So this is not limited only to demographics clearly visible. It is also related to skills. Remember that example I had given you about the guitar player. Professional background and personality traits. So valuing diversity at work helps everyone. Now there's a study by Deloitte. Recently I was doing a session on decision making practices and I came across a study by Deloitte, one of the famous organizations, and it has, you know, it has given a very high percentage rating to decision making done by diverse groups as against groups which are pretty homogeneous. Now, how do we go about developing a diverse team? So a diverse team can have several business related benefits, and here we are enlisting a few of them. So a better understanding of the customers. So since they are so diverse, they can plug inputs and use peer learning to know the customers, since they are all diverse. Customers may represent one set, so they can create a commonality between themselves and their eventual customers. Improved employee engagement. So there will not be biases, there will not be groupthink or core groups. They will be all diverse and they will all feel engaged. So it's not like people from Maharashtra are the ones who are engaged. People from Karnataka and Kerala do not feel a part, no. If there are diverse people, each one will feel a part. Greater innovation, since they are working together, forgetting any boundaries, there will be more innovation. So boundaryless innovation is bound to happen from this context. More diversity, more perspectives. So if I have traveled the world, I will have more perspective than somebody who's not. If I have 10 people like me coming from different places, there will be more perspectives generated. And of course, the productivity will go higher and will create higher revenue. So what are some strategies that professionals can use? So the recruitment professionals, how can they hire such diverse workforce? So first is ensure diversity on the shortlisting and interview panels. So when you advertise, okay, you advertise with diversity in mind. And you also do that in the fine print by revising your job ads in accordance with the earlier point. Beware of gender-coded words like he should be. a transformational manager. He should have an experience of more than 20 years. He should have represented his previous organization as an executive. Now, over here, what's happening? It's a gender-coded, pronoun, which is a he. So over here, if it's a pronoun, which is he, do you think the ladies will apply, even though they are, they are equally competent, correct? So you should, this is what is known as the gender-coded words. He, she would be the pronouns. Now let's look at the next part of this particular thought process or concept, which is virtual recruitment strategies in the pandemic. Now, although the pandemic is subsiding rapidly, many parts of the world are still under the grip of this pandemic. Okay, so adding unique steps to the recruitment process isn't the right way to go, as many people feel. In fact, or instead, use of technology to screen the growing number of available candidates, providing them with a better experience and in general becoming more efficient is the way forward. As of the time of this recording, India specifically has fought the pandemic pretty well, but these times the mindset, the psyche will stay. So people working from their homes or remote locations, people getting interviewed from remote locations is going to stay. So therefore, such strategies need to be used or applied. So here are four virtual recruiting strategies to use for hiring in a post-COVID world. The first is sharpen the online presence. I think I've spoken volumes or at length regarding this particular point. So the idea is like a pencil. If you use a blunt edge, you wouldn't be able to write much. So you have to use a sharpener, correct? So sharpen the online presence. So tell people that we have a prominent online presence and you can avail of that. Now, if technology is not used properly, what use is it of? So use technology properly. So you must have by now had a license of Microsoft Teams, the most commonly used software, certain other applications like a Zoom, like a Cisco, and others like a Google Meet, which is a free tool. So sharpen the online presence, use it for your recruitment purposes. Brush up on video conferencing tools, the one which I've spoken of. I think many folks by now have become experts. Offer a virtual taste of employee experience. So maybe you can record videos and you can keep them on your site, on your blogs for people to view. You can have a 360 degrees view of your office and present that like the hotels do. Find online tools for technical interviews. So you might prevent them, as mentioned in one of our previous chapters, prevent them from cheating. They have to show their online presence, their face, so that we can, record information and observe them better. Now we'll come to a topic which is very important from our current strategic management concept, which is vendor management practices. So many organizations retain in-house recruiting specialists that are entrusted with posting jobs, finding candidates, and assisting to hire qualified individuals. Remember examples provided previously. So when a company needs assistance recruiting talent, so beyond that which their internal recruiting department can manage, organizations often turn to external professional recruiters. Now this is slightly repetitive, but gives us a very good insight. So these are the categories of those agencies. Let's quickly look at them. Staffing and temporary recruitment firms, classic headhunters, which we've looked at before, agency or contingency recruiters, and recruitment consulting firms. So since we have already made a mention of these, we will skim to the next slide. So these include, so the types of recruitment agencies also include in-house recruitment, which we all know, headhunters, traditional agencies, and niche recruiters. So we are just in a way summarizing what we have learned earlier, And thus, I am just mentioning them because detailed examples have been given for each. So in the previous figure, we've seen the various types of recruitment agencies which make up the vendors. So selecting the right vendor is a fairly complex process. A fact that organizations that need to remember is that the RPO or the recruitment process outsourcing is here to stay. Now it's very difficult for the human resources to have a completely focused recruitment process running. So they tend to outsource this process so that they can focus on other developmental activities. So thus they have institutionalized or look forward to RPOs. While it could be present some problems, so it could present some problems, just like outsourcing any other business process, it holds the promise of reduced hiring costs, reduction in time to hire. So it's preferred by many organizations today to give it to somebody who is a specialist and works around the clock or hour to complete this. So what are some of the important factors? So we will cite two important factors before we close this particular chapter. So one is metrics and goals. So before recruiters define requirements, it is vital to define their main goal and exactly how they will measure those goals. So this is what is very important. And of course, the next factor behind choosing a vendor is the experience factor. So it is essential to look for vendors that have worked in your industry and have overcome the same recruitment challenges that you have, which may have led you to outsource. So do they possess relevant experience? So let's say company ABC is a prospective vendor. They are interested in serving as your RPO partner. But have they experienced the recruitments that happen or similar recruitments of profiles that happen or are currently happening in your organization? So people who look at the recruitment process as a value addition need also to look into these factors before choosing a vendor. So in this manner, we have completed a discussion about how do we integrate and infuse strategy into the recruitment and the hiring process. Thank you.